Earlier today, four internet giants, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and Cisco, faced tough questions from members of Congress about business dealings in China. Members of the House subcommittee that oversees global human rights accused the companies of helping China to squash dissent and curb free speech. Let's listen to committee chairman Christopher Smith, Republican of New Jersey, this from his opening statement.
A search for terms such as Tiananmen Square produces two very different results. The one from Google CN shows a picture of a smiling couple. But the results from Google.com show scores of photos depicting the mayhem and brutality of the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre.
In their defense, the companies argued that their presence in China, already one of the world's largest markets and growing very fast, actually helped to foster democracy. For more on the hearings and the accusations against these companies, we turn to Robert McMahon, deputy editor of the Council on Foreign Relations website, who joins us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program.
Nice to be here.
So why is the House holding these hearings, do you think?
Well, first you must realize Chris Smith, the chairman of the subcommittee, lives and breathes human rights issues and is one of the engines behind the annual report on religious freedom and State Department's report on human rights and so forth. And this issue was this issue is one that's time has come, basically. Mm-hmm. You had in the same week of these hearings the State Department announcing a task force on a similar issue, basically, trying to find ways to get around internet filtering schemes in countries with authoritarian governments. It's an issue that whose time has come. Mm-hmm. Chris Smith is tapping into this right now. And also there is a bit of I think, some discontent on the Hill, because two weeks ago there was a Congressional Human Rights Caucus where they called in these four representatives of these four countries, and they did not show up. So this is tapping into some real serious feelings.
And some of the search engine companies have also resisted efforts by this government, the Washington's government, to get information about their searches for various reasons. We did a show about that a while ago. At the same time, apparently providing the same kinds of information to the government in China.
That is correct, yes.
So that's going to irritate some people, don't you think?
You've touched on it, yes.
Yeah. We're talking about the hearings today involving, Google has inherited, I guess, the brand. So it's the Google hearings and China. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Robert McMahon, how do these companies defend their position?
Well, they take the stance that they are leaders in their fields, and China is a powerfully expanding economy, and they need to be there and be involved in this. And by being engaged with China, they can have a sort of benign influence by working with the Chinese on setting up whether the infrastructure or the software. They can help be a positive influence there. While at the same time, they say they are not providing the technical prowess to go after people.
Mm-hmm. They say basically if we're going to operate in China where we think we're a beneficial force, we have to obey Chinese rules.
That's correct.
And Chinese laws.
That's right.
And so therefore they find themselves, though, in the awkward position of helping the Chinese government suppress dissent.
That is true. One of the key issues here is the case of Yahoo, where Yahoo officials have acknowledged turning over information on a Chinese journalist who had been sharing information on an anniversary preparations for the 15th anniversary of Tiananmen Square crackdown by the Chinese government. The Chinese officials got wind of this, went to Yahoo, and Yahoo basically assisted them in tracking him down. He's now in prison.
Mm-hmm. And obviously that's going to be causing them some difficulties. On the other hand, if they decided not to obey the rules, the laws set up by China, would they be allowed to operate?
That's a good question. It's a tough call. There's apparently a number of informal discussions going on that a lot of people don't know about, but the sense is that they would be restricted, or that it would be a difficult market for them to penetrate.
Right. What control does Congress have over this?
So Congress, with this internet legislation that is supposed to roll out the end of this week, is basically saying U.S. Companies cannot do business this way, that they have to locate their servers outside the country, for example, the internet search engines, and basically require them not to help the Chinese in terms of in blatant censorship.
So because they're U.S.-based companies, the Congress has a role over this. Can they force Google or Yahoo or any of these other companies to change their business practices through this, do you think?
Well, they can certainly put pressure on them. The popular pressure has already caused these four representatives, first of all, to appear in this hearing today and to come out with statements. Yahoo had a statement recently on its website saying it is committed to the free dissemination of information and so forth. So there's a lot of popular pressure on them as well. In terms of public pressure, It's the law of the land. They can certainly, if you look at the example of the Sullivan principles in South Africa, you know, businesses can be sort of coerced into taking a certain moral stand in terms of doing business mm-hmm. with governments that are not seen as observing human rights.
Okay. Stay with us, if you would, Robert McMahon. He's a deputy editor of the Council on Foreign Relations website, which has been running a lot of items on this story. We're going to take more of your calls after we get back from a short break. China and the Internet, we want to hear your thoughts. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're talking about Internet companies and how they do business in China. Four giants, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and Cisco, got grilled today on Capitol Hill over their willingness to go along with Chinese censorship in order to do business in one of the world's biggest economies. The companies argue their presence alone fosters democratization. Where do you weigh in? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Our guest is Rob McMahon, deputy editor of the Council on Foreign Relations website. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Let's get a caller on the line. And this is Jonathan. Jonathan calling from Pinehurst in North Carolina.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I think the whole thing is fairly inexcusable, but not surprising. This is sort of it was an ever thus kind of a problem. These are just businesses. They're publicly traded. They have huge stockholders, huge net worths. Why would we, in the most cynical view, expect them to behave any other way? That we permit them as a society to operate in the United States, yet have a standard like this for somewhere else, is somewhat akin to letting other companies use prison labor. For the sake of the bottom line, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Jonathan, thanks very much. I guess in part, Robert McMahon, there's got to be concern over their brand. If they're popularized as being oppressors of human rights, it's not going to be somebody might choose another search engine.
That's correct. And speaking of brand, I mean, the Google representative today in Congress mentioned the famous "Do No Evil" slogan. And Google is very sensitive about this, and as sort of the last of these major four companies coming into China have tried to take care in terms of what the parameters of their functioning in the country will be. Representative Smith mentioned the what you can and cannot search for on Google CN. They see that as a less sort of sins of omission rather than commission in terms of allowing that to take place.
Mm-hmm. Joining us now is James McGregor. He's the author of 1 Billion Customers, Lessons from the Front Lines of Doing Business in China. And he's also the Wall Street Journal's former China bureau chief. He joins us now by phone from New York City. Nice to have you on the program today.
Good to be here, Neil.
I know you spent many years working in China. What's your feeling about Google's business practices there and these other search engines as well?
Well, I don't know what all the fuss is about, to be honest with you. I was in China way before the Internet came in, and I've seen what the Internet has done in China in bringing in more information. Now, what is their choice? Do they stay offshore and they have other companies then capture that market, and those companies are listed on American stock exchanges? Don't forget that NetEase, Sohu, Baidu, these are all Chinese companies listed here with American capital, and they are doing this censorship. What these companies have to do is they've got to do it in an honorable way. And I think that Google has started that by keeping their blogs and discussion groups out and actually labeling that they are censoring searches. I would hope that Yahoo would do the same thing and that Microsoft would do the same thing. And in doing so, you're kind of tearing the face off the Chinese government and not letting them pretend their Internet is just like any other Internet. And I think, as the Google guy said today at the hearing, they're making a meaningful, though imperfect, contribution. We don't have the choice to stay offshore. We aren't that powerful. If our companies are not there, then the Japanese, the Australians, and the homegrown companies will be there. And by being there and pushing the envelope every day, I think they will improve it.
The concept of honorable censorship, though, it's an odd juxtaposition of words.
Well, it's not a perfect world. You're playing in China. where they do have censorship and information control, and the one thing that has been breaking the lock on that has been the Internet. For example, when they recently had this benzene slick going down the river up in northeast China, that never would have been reported years ago. Well, it was on the Internet immediately, and eventually the party couldn't hide it, and the premier had to fly up there and do something about it.
Many people said in part because that river eventually goes through Russian territory, and the Russians might have noticed.
Well, yeah, but I was in China when they used to have airplane crashes and they wouldn't be reported. You know, if you look at the surveys of Internet usage in China, it's about 85% of the people use them for news. News on the Internet in China is more important than anywhere else, and these companies have to keep pushing. When I worked at Dow Jones, we had the Chinese propaganda department and Xinhua News Agency try to take over the financial information business and censor it. We fought for 2 years and beat them. You have to be in there fighting the fight and expanding information. It's an imperfect world. You don't accomplish anything by staying offshore other than basically disarming your own companies.
Let's get another caller in on the conversation. Tom. Tom's calling from Northern Virginia.
Hi, yes. I had a question, well, a common question about reciprocity. I haven't caught the last couple of minutes because I was on hold, but it's not new for the Chinese government to place restrictions on American companies operating there that we would consider unreasonable by our standards. We know that not too long ago, Microsoft was forced to reveal some of the source code for its operating systems to the Chinese government, and that was one of the demands that the Chinese placed on Microsoft being able to operate in China. But the question I've always had in my mind is reciprocity. If, you know, what is so hard, why is it so hard for us to insist that the Chinese allow American companies the same freedoms that we allow Chinese companies here, or on the inverse of it, you know, place restrictions on Chinese companies operating here that they place on the American companies operating there.
Is there any element of reciprocity that might be available, Robert McMahon?
Well, it's a very interesting point. It would involve the government sort of examining its trade relationship with China, which is of course is enormously important. This new task force announced by the State Department, the congressional pressure might be forcing this issue to come forward. Right now, there's been a lot of rhetorical flourish from the administration about human rights and democratization in China and concern about internet controls. But when you get down to these types of issues, this is very serious, and I don't know if they're ready to deal with this just yet. I think the ground is, the debate is starting to shift in this direction, but I'm not sure if they're ready there yet.
Mm-hmm. And James McGregor, obviously the Chinese are, they do a lot of business with this country. They are subject to pressures as well.
Well, they are subject to pressures, and I guess I would bring this around to the oil industry. Remember when the Chinese oil company tried to buy Sinopec and Congress made a lot of noise about it on national security issues? Well, mm-hmm. That was nonsense because, they pumped 0.6% of American gasoline at the time. What the U.S. should have done is reciprocity and said, great, you're going out and you're buying assets overseas, you're acting like international oil companies. If you want to do that in America, well, then you have reciprocity. You open up your oil market. I think reciprocity, where we can use that leverage, is a good idea.
Tom, thanks for the call.
Sure.
Let's go to, this will be Robert. Robert in San Diego.
Hi. Two things. I had a question about China being one of the biggest human rights violators, by international standards. We still do business with them. We still give them most favored trade status. And also, what's the difference of us going over there and doing manufacturing? Well, we don't have to follow our environmental laws in the United States. We can go over there and pollute the air and pollute the water and pay substandard, wages without any, penalty.
I guess James McGregor is saying what sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander as well. American companies like to be in China for some of the reasons that he's citing. It's cheap to manufacture.
I disagree because the American companies that I know in China and the European companies and the Japanese companies, in fact, they follow international environmental standards to the T. It's the local companies that are trashing the environment because they're scared of people like me. When I was a reporter of the Wall Street Journal, finding them doing something wrong. I've been to many foreign factories in China, and they do follow, I think they follow international standards very strongly. That's a misnomer that goes on.
Aren't some of those local manufacturers subcontractors for those American companies?
Well, I don't know. I would
exactly.
Say, And if you are doing that, you better take care of your subcontractors. I would agree that they're responsible for that.
Well, exactly. I used to work for a well-known shoe company, and the reason they manufacture out in the countryside is because they can book time in those factories, and they're allowed to just, you know, manufacture on the cheap because they don't have to follow the guidelines in the United States. And a lot of their workers have been, you know, contaminated with toluene and MEK, and to where they have liver damage, permanent liver damage.
That's completely wrong. That shouldn't. I would agree on any American or international agency being very tight on that.
I don't think we can own that, but I mean that does happen. And would you argue that, you know, China's a violator of human rights, one of the largest violators of human rights in the world?
Oh, China is a violator of human rights, but I've been there 20 years, and I've seen where it was when I got there and where it is now. And I don't know. I'm not an apologist for the Chinese government. They do things that I find appalling at times, but I've also seen huge improvements in people's lives and people's ability to speak out. And, you know, the country is on the right trajectory.
Well, I would give, you know, Google the benefit of a doubt then, because I think they're following the same line our manufacturers have for years.
Okay, Robert, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you for your time.
And let me ask you, James McGregor, In 10 or 20 years, I mean, one of the things the companies also say is, look, we don't have the clout to get into a fight with the Chinese government. In 10 to 20 years, is that going to change? Are they going to be in a better position to exercise more control?
For these internet companies?
Yeah.
Oh, I think they're going to be in a great position, because you got to remember, the Chinese are building a middle class, and a middle class that once their stomach is full, they want the same rights and freedoms as everybody else, and they're sitting on a boiling pot of water now, the Chinese leadership, and it's going to be a much freer and open place, more open place in 20 years, and I think our internet companies will have contributed greatly to that, as long as they stick to standards, as long as they push the envelope all the time and they don't kowtow to the government. They follow the government's laws, but they also have a conscience and try to keep pushing the envelope.
We're talking about China and internet search engine companies, Google, Yahoo, that sort of thing. Our guests are James McGregor, author of 1 Billion Customers, Lessons from the Front Lines of Doing Business in China, and Robert McMahon, deputy editor of the Council on Foreign Relations website. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Emily. Emily calling from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi. My question has to do with how they stop people from accessing the American versions of the websites. I mean, I know that the .cn versions of the websites are censored, but the .com versions of the websites are what we see whenever we type it in. So Is it not possible for the people in China to access the English versions of the websites?
Robert McMahon, how does this work?
Well, I'm not an expert on this, but from what I understand, first of all, it's a question of the language, their ability to read it in Mandarin, for example, and it's also a question of Google making available some of these sites that are considered sensitive. For example, the Falun, anything related to the Falun Gong movement, spiritual movement, or perhaps the Tibetan independence. There are certain filters and certain no-go areas that Google has agreed to omit from its site, so that as Congressman Smith today illustrated with the Tiananmen Square example, you go on Google CN and it's there's a smiling face, and you go to another Google search engine and you find a rich history of what's happened in the square. So they're able to basically remove from the site these domain names.
Can I
go ahead?
Step in? Yeah, it's a great firewall of China. I mean, they have an array of different firewalls to prevent things from coming in. But the great news is the Chinese engineers are very resourceful. It's a cat and mouse game, and they're always finding ways around it. Now, let's not forget that Google has kept its Chinese language search engine that is offshore completely uncensored. So if Chinese people can get around their own firewall, they have a complete and open Chinese language internet search engine through Google, and there's always ways around it.
Emily, thanks very much for the call.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. How much is this going to be a precedent? One of the things we've heard and read is that other countries in Asia might want to keep some news out of their people's hands as well, are watching the way China is interacting with these big Western search engines. James McGregor?
Well, it's already that way. Singapore is far from an open media environment. They censor their internet, probably not to the same extent as China. And they're, you know, the satellite television stations of Asia are all centered in Singapore, so they can censor it. I mean, the HBO movies you watch in Asia have all had the sex scenes cut out and other salty things cut out. It's pretty widespread in Asia, but if they're fighting a losing battle, and they may not lose it in 1 year or 2 years or 5 years, but in a 10, 20 year span, they will lose this battle.
Mm-hmm. I would add to that Iran as well. Iran, the notion of a cat and mouse game is very relevant there. A lot of blogging activity going on there, and it's considered, the government is still considered to have one of the most sophisticated, outside of China, one of the most sophisticated web filtering networks, and using some of the technology that U.S. companies pioneered, by the way. But by the same token, the blogs keep on popping up where others have been quashed, and the U.S. is taking a greater interest, actually, in this area in trying to reach Iranians.
Robert McMahon, let me ask you, it's hard sometimes to read the congressional tea leaves, but what's likely to come out of these hearings from what you've been able to watch?
Well, it looks like by the end of the week there will be legislation coming out of the subcommittee that was holding the hearings today, dealing with some concrete issues that these companies will have to pay attention to in terms of locating servers off-site and a range of measures. This issue of a global Internet Freedom Act mm-hmm. is going to, I think, just going to gather steam.
And are the companies going to object to this, do you think?
I think the companies are going to, as indicated by some of these representatives today, they are actually, in a way, welcoming some U.S. Leadership, helping having U.S. officials sort of run interference for them and making these decisions a little bit easier for them.
So they could again go to China and say, Washington tied our hands, there's nothing we
exactly.
can do.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Robert McMahon, Deputy Editor of the Council on Foreign Relations website. He was kind enough to join us here today in Studio 3A. The CFR website has a big feature on these hearings that were run today. I appreciate your time. James McGregor, also thank you for being with us today.
We're glad to be with you.
James McGregor's book is 1 Billion Customers, Lessons from the Front Lines of Doing Business in China. He used to work for the Wall Street Journal as its China Bureau Chief, and he joined us today by phone from New York City. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. ¶¶